Rashini Rajkumar with you this 1 week before Super Bowl Sunday. It is January 28th, and we've got a great hour for you. At 1:35, we'll have a state trooper in the house, so don't speed, folks. We're going to talk about wintertime crashes. All of the time you need to protect yourself when it comes to what do you do if you've been involved. But with 12 to 16 inches of snow on the ground that landed on the ground earlier in the week all over Minnesota, what do you need to know? There were a lot of reports of injuries and crashes. And even before the big storm, about a few days before that, I was in a crash, which I didn't get a chance to share with you last week. So I'm going to talk about that with Sergeant Williams, and we're going to get some insight and advice from the State Patrol on how you should deal with them and protect yourself from bad drivers out there. But first, protection is needed when it comes to concussions. You don't have to be an NFL star. You don't have to be an athlete even to be a victim of a concussion and a victim of traumatic brain injury. And so that's why we regularly check in with our show's traumatic brain injury contributor. She is survivor, author, and speaker Amy Zellmer, and she's brought a friend with her today, Dr. Uzma Samadani. She's a neurosurgeon at Hennepin County Medical Center. Welcome, ladies.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
You know, this topic, Amy, we've covered now since your injury, and we're going on, what, 4 years?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Next week, it'll be my 4-year anniversary.
Wow. Congratulations. Give people the real quick how it even happened to you, because that exact injury could happen to anyone.
Yes, I was walking down our driveway and I slipped on a patch of black ice, didn't know it was there. Feet went up in the air and I landed on the back of my head.
It's been a journey. You went through a lot of different doctors. You've brought your favorite doctor and your current doctor, Dr. Jeremy Schmoe,
yes,
in a couple different times. You were at the state fair with me also. So it's a creative treatment that he was able to provide. How are things now for you?
I'm doing really well. I still have my moments where I feel kind of crummy, but for the most part, I'm feeling really well.
Well, congratulations. We always are up on your health. Amy has really become an advocate. She writes for the Huffington Post. And in fact, I posted her latest piece on this topic on my Facebook wall, the Rashini Rajkumar wall. You can go to it and read. Amy has pulled together a wonderful assortment of some of the real trailblazing work that's happening in Minnesota really trying to turn the story on this one. She also sits on the Brain Injury Advisory Council through the Brain Injury Association of America, and she is also involved locally with the Minnesota Brain Injury Alliance. So she's become, unfortunately, for sad reasons, but fortunately now you're such an advocate. You've written a book. You're working on your second book. And because of Amy and her connection to this topic and her connection to us on WCCO, we are able to find Dr. Uzma Samadani. She's a neurosurgeon and brain injury researcher at Hennepin County Medical Center. She's also an unaffiliated neurotrauma consultant to the National Football League. Dr. Samadani, you know, NFL is really almost become synonymous with CTE and concussions because there have been so many headlines on this topic.
Well, I think that's what happened is that football has shone a spotlight on the idea that brain injury can cause lasting deficits. And that has been good for the entire community in brain injury because previously people who were injured didn't realize that they had a severe problem, didn't realize that they had a problem that needed to be dealt with. And as Amy has very aptly pointed out through her work, brain injury can happen to anybody. It can happen to someone walking down their driveway doing absolutely nothing dangerous. And they can slip on the ice and fall. And so I think what we have to realize is that while football has focused the media, the problem is universal and it's affecting everybody.
Doctor, can we say there's hope right now, though? Because it seems like there are a lot of organizations, your research, entrepreneurs that are working on this topic.
Yes, I think that what has happened is that because of the NFL and because of the military attention to brain injury, there has been an increase in funding for the problem. There is much more awareness of the need for prevention of the problem, for classification of the nature of brain injury and for treatment of the problems associated with brain injury, both acutely, like right after the injury happens, and chronically in a delayed fashion.
Let's get into some of the resources that are out there. And Amy has really done a good job of chronicling, giving you some background. So if you're a victim or you're a parent, you want to get more information, there's just so much going on right here. One of those things at HCMC, Amy, is the Brain Injury Research Lab. It's using innovative technology that measures eye movement. Wow. To better detect and classify concussions. What can you and the doctor tell us about that?
Well, I have to say the first time I heard Dr. Samadani speak at the Minnesota Brain Injury Alliance conference, she was talking about eye tracking and how it can help in diagnosis of concussion. And I was just like, yes, because that was my biggest problem. I knew my eyes weren't right, but every doctor I went to was like, your eyes are fine, because technically I still had 20/20 vision. But I could tell that my eyes were causing my dizzy and balance problems. And so hearing her talk about it, I was just like, yes, you know, we're shedding some light on this. And I, you know, just the work that she's doing, the work that Dr. Schmoe's doing, you know, it's really revolutionizing, or I think it will revolutionize the way we diagnose and treat concussions.
What is a big myth, doctor, right now in this whole world of concussions?
Well, I think there are several. I think the first is that concussion is something that's easy to diagnose or define, because it's not. And I think what you hear from Amy's case is that her concussion had certain symptoms. But from other people, we've heard that their concussion can have very, very different symptoms. And the problem with brain injury is that, you know, Rich Ellenbogen from the NFL used to say, you've seen one brain injury, you've seen one brain injury. They're all different. Every single brain injury is unique. And it's not only the nature of the injury, the nature of the blow to the head and its impact on the physical tissues, but it's the genetics of the person who's behind it, and it's the environment of the person who's behind it. So we know that there are probably about 10 or 12 genes that affect your recovery from brain injury. And these are things you have absolutely no control over. So unfortunately, the same brain injury can affect two different people very, very differently. There's also environment. People who have more resources, people who have a supportive community, tend to do better. People who are alone in their recovery have a harder time. So there's a lot of factors that play into how well someone will do after a brain injury.
We are talking traumatic brain injury, and we're connecting it to the Super Bowl, because there are events coming up this week and through Super Bowl weekend that you can go to. Many of those events are free. Raising awareness, teaching you, and our experts today are our show's traumatic brain contributor, brain injury contributor, Amy Zellmer. She's a HuffPost contributor as well as a survivor herself, and Dr. Uzma Samadani, whose work has appeared in many places, including the New York Times, Le Figaro, and the Washington Post. So these ladies have a lot of brain power between them, so please give us a text or a call, 81807, or call us, 651-989-9226, or 866-989-9226. Are you a parent out there who's worried and you want to understand how do you help prevent this from happening to your child? Are you someone who has a traumatic brain injury and maybe you want to share some resources with us? We'd love to hear from you. We are going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to preview with these ladies some events that are coming out that you can go to.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Rashini Rajkumar with you. You can call us up and talk with our traumatic brain injury panel of Dr. Uzma Samadani and Amy Zellmer, who is a survivor herself, going on 4 years since her injury, but she has really come a long way, and we've chronicled her own journey as she's come on to share updates with us over the years about this topic and helping many of you out there. You can call or text us. 81807 is the text line, or give us a call, 651-989-9226. Lee is on the line from St. James. Hi there, Lee.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks for calling.
Yeah, I guess I was listening, and I wanted to kind of offer a little insight. There's, again, so many different factors that include the kid and what happened and their genetic makeup, but I'm a high school English teacher and football coach for 30 years, and one thing that I've noticed is that the handwriting is a really good sign as to whether there's been a concussion or a brain injury. It's kind of like with the eyesight that she was talking about, where her eyes were 20/20, but she knew there was something wrong. When somebody gets hit in the head, it's not their hand that got hit. There's nothing impaired about that, but I know that it's been something that's real marked difference in the handwriting of those students and players that I had who suffered a concussion.
Really so interesting. Dr. Somadani,
I would say it's not something you would want to ignore. It's a pretty easy, quick thing to do for people that may have some suspicions or concerns, and I think it's hard for maybe a kid to hide that too in regards to trying to pretend they haven't had it.
All right, let's let the doctor kind of weigh in with the medical side on that.
Yes, I think this is an excellent observation. I think that there are many different pathways in the brain that can be affected by a brain injury. And so therefore, you're going to see manifestations in possibly all aspects or many different diverse aspects of a person's life. And with children, if they're engaging in writing on a regular basis, I'm not at all surprised that you would see a difference in their writing capacity and capability. Obviously, their thinking is also going to be affected. So it's not even just the evenness of their penmanship, but also the quantitative nature, the qualitative nature of what they write. So I think this is a very interesting finding. There have been studies that have shown that children who have a brain injury text less, and they're less likely to engage in social media because the use of the cell phone is bothering them.
Wow, and that connection, the synapses may be affected.
Correct. So I think that one of the things that we have to do as a society is be able to identify concussion better. And using a multimodal assessment, you know, looking at different aspects of a person's life can help us figure out when something's wrong.
All right. We've got some calls coming in. We have several texts, and I want to get to the conference, so we'll try to get through these quickly. This listener is asking, in the chronic stage, is fibromyalgia triggered by a TBI? Is stem cell therapy an option?
Well, I would say, generally speaking, fibromyalgia has been associated with a number of different causers. So some people have postulated that it's a response to an immune stimulus. So some sort of infection or virus or autoimmune response can cause these problems. And it leads to chronic inflammation, and that may lead to the symptoms of fibromyalgia. It's unclear if it's completely understood. I think it's a complex etiology. With some of these conditions that cause pain, my suspicion is that sometimes there are multiple etiologies that can lead to the same symptoms.
When you say etiology, let's define that for everybody.
Multiple different causes can lead to similar symptoms. And so when you say fibromyalgia, you may actually be looking at a family of different problems that cause similar disease, that cause similar symptoms. And so that can be confusing.
Okay, this listener is asking this. I'm assuming if a concussion has happened, it would be the preface. Is there a first aid treatment that should be performed if medical treatment is not available?
Well, I think it depends on the state of the person who's been hit in the head. If you have a person who's been hit in the head and they have what we call a neurologic change, then that person needs to be seeking medical attention.
As soon as possible.
Yes. Yeah. And so that may even be sometimes a circumstance where you need to call an ambulance. But someone who loses consciousness, someone who has a seizure, someone who has abnormal twitching or motion or movement on one part of their body or another, or paralysis on one part of their body or another, someone who's dazed, not answering questions appropriately, doesn't know where they are, you probably need to seek medical attention right away.
Yeah, I think that's the safe bet. Amy Zellmer, your latest HuffPost piece looks at a lot of local research and trailblazers, entrepreneurs, scientists, doctors. And one that really struck out for me was Prevent Biometrics. And they have an embedded mouth guard, which is paired with a mobile app that's worn by the player that helps the docs and the trainers track some things. Can you tell us about that? That sounds so fascinating.
Yeah, so it's a mouth guard that the kids wear during play and practice, and it syncs to an app, and the mouth guard itself will light up if they've had a significant jolt.
So a red light comes up.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And then on the sideline, the athletic trainer, the coach, whoever, they can be monitoring it as well. And, you know, I think it's really cool they chose to do a mouth guard opposed to a helmet sensor because the helmet itself can move independently, whereas the mouth guard and the mouth, those don't move.
That's great. And with a plus or minus 5 margin of error, it is the only product, Amy says in her HuffPost piece, to meet the NFL's validation standard for head impact. So the NFL is tracking this also. Are they using it yet? Do you know?
That I don't know.
Okay. But very interesting stuff. All right. There are several events that are coming up, and one of the first is Wednesday, January 31st. It's the Minnesota Spinal Cord and Traumatic Brain Injury Research Symposium. Long name, but very important content. And Dr. Samadani will be the event moderator at that for part of the event. Lots of different doctors and researchers speaking. Doctor, what can you share with us by way of preview on that?
Well, the purpose of this event is to showcase the work that's being done in the state of Minnesota and that's being supported by the Minnesotan people, by the legislature, to advance research for spinal cord and traumatic brain injury treatment. And there are going to be 4 oral presentations from my lab, as well as several posters. There are presentations from the University of Minnesota, a Department of Neurosurgery, presentations from Mayo Clinic, and from outlying communities. So we have multiple researchers who are going to be presenting their work. We have a couple of commercial partners. We have Tackle Bar Football, and we have Prevent Biometrics that are also going to be presenting their work.
Great. So some of the brands we've talked about today. And Amy, I understand that this spinal cord symposium is dear to your heart, and it's such a case simple and really a symbol that all of us can be citizen activists. You helped bring this about.
Yeah, I was part of the grassroots efforts. I helped lobby with the Minnesota Brain Injury Alliance and met with my representatives and helped other citizen advocates, helped them meet with their representatives as well.
That is so great. More events coming up on February 1st, the Players Health Super Bowl Summit, a health summit, which is an event focused on gathering professional athletes, sports medicine professionals, leaders in sports administration. And then what also sounds great is SportCon on February 2nd, where it will be speakers from professional teams and tech. But there's also a startup showcase. This event is free. And you'll be at many of these, Amy?
Yeah, I'm planning to attend all of them. And then on the SportCon event, I'm moderating a concussion panel that Dr. Samadani and Dr. Schmo will be on.
Oh, great.
And I'm also sitting on a media panel. So that's going to be something new for me.
Excellent. And what time is are your events that day?
I believe 11:30 and 1:15.
All right. And people can go where for this? And it's a free event.
Oh, that's a trick question.
Okay.
They can go to your page to find the article.
Okay, got it.
So I have all the links in there.
Okay, so the links are there, and if she has that info, you can always text that to me. I can let people know before we go. Excellent. Well, so wonderful to talk with both of you. Good luck with these events that are coming up. Dr. Uzma Samadani and Amy Zellmer, such a pleasure to have you both in studio. Great information and great questions also from our listeners.
Thanks so much.
Good luck and have
fun.
I mean, this is good stuff. All right. We're going to take a break, and then when we come back, we'll take your questions for our state patrol officer who will join us and talk about crashes. Rashini Rajkumar, back with you. Phone and text lines are open, folks, for my next guest. We are talking crashes. Know your rights. Know what you should do. 81807 is our text line, or feel free to call. 651-989-9226 or 866-989-9226. And my guest today is someone who knows a lot about this topic. She is Sergeant Aziah Williams. She's a recruitment coordinator with the Minnesota State Patrol, but you've been out there in the trenches on and off during your career, Sergeant. Give me just kind of an update on what you and your colleagues are seeing on the roads these days.
Yes, good afternoon, Rashini. These days, there's a lot of crashes. There's a lot of crashes, especially after snowfall. Like last week when we had, 10, 12, 13 inches in some areas.
16 in some.
Wow. We had a lot of traffic crashes. A lot of it is people going too fast, not paying attention to their surroundings and not adjusting to the weather. We'll see a lot of rear-end crashes, a lot of people that go off-road. We call them vehicle off-road or in the ditch. As a result of the weather and just not accounting for conditions. And then we'll have, of course, those crashes that are in intersections when people can't stop or they don't allow themselves enough time to slow down before getting to that intersection. And then, you know, they find themselves in the middle connecting with another vehicle.
I have to share something with you, Sergeant, and I don't know if you're aware of this, but it was not even that Monday, the 23rd of January, or the 22nd of January. It wasn't the snowstorm, but if the Thursday prior to that, I was minding my own business, like just focused on the road, had the green light, getting ready to take a left turn outside of the Walker Art Institute, and a car was approaching ahead who had the green light going straight, waited for her. Well, a guy who was actually on Hennepin cruised through a red light, hit her, then hit me.
Wow.
It was a tragic, not because of injury or any death, so that's good. Yeah. But it was just what could have been so avoided.
Absolutely.
Three-car crash.
Absolutely.
So all cars hauled away by tow trucks. I'm waiting still to get my car back.
Oh, wow.
My car had a lot of damage, but the driver who hit us had the worst. I've posted that picture on my Facebook wall. The bottom line is, you know, I knew right away to call 911 because,
good,
you know, you're in that situation. There's injury, obviously. Get into that process. You're, you know, you could be stressed. You're frustrated. That driver was. He wasn't defensive or anything, but I got out and I said, do you know you went through a red light? And he nodded and said yes. So I thought, all right, calling the police now. They came. But, you know, we're there then at that intersection for almost 2 hours.
Wow. Yes. Yeah. So if you get into especially a crash like that in an intersection, your priority, of course, is your health and your safety. So one thing that we tell people, if you're involved in a crash in the middle of a roadway, don't assume that people see you. Don't assume that they're watching and looking out for you. Always, always, always be careful. Sometimes you'll see people who, yes, there's a lot of adrenaline. You just got hit in a car crash. Your first reaction is to get out of the car. Well, be careful when you get out of that car because somebody else might still be going through that intersection and it might be too late for them to stop. And a lot of times people get injured that way.
That's a really good point.
Yes, happens more often than you think. So always, always, always check your surroundings before you get out of the vehicle. Make sure that you're okay. If you don't feel okay, don't get out. We don't want you to move around and injure yourself. And then check on other drivers. See what medical attention others need and provide that as best you can. Or absolutely, your next step, call 911. Call 911, report that crash, get the authorities going, get fire, EMS going as soon as possible to tend to anyone's injuries, and then also to manage that scene and keep you safe while you're there.
In this situation, I was able to move my – it's not drivable since, but I was able to move the car at least out of the intersection onto a bit of a side road.
Good.
The other two cars were plunked down in the middle, and other traffic moved around them. And, you know, while we all waited on the sidewalks for the police to come, and you know, everybody was exchanging information, so there
good,
wasn't any of that kind of going on. But sometimes there is attitude from the different drivers, right?
Yes.
And what is your you know, it's hard, there's adrenaline going on, but are there a couple questions that — I'm talking with Sergeant Williams from the Minnesota State Patrol. She's a recruitment coordinator but has lots of roadside experience when it comes to crashes, dealing with people out there. Are there a couple questions that you would recommend that are kind of a good first couple, two questions, or whether it's exchanging of information, but just things that we might not easily remember or think of in the heat of the moment?
Yes. Well, as far as asking someone, you know, when you said, did you know that you ran that red light? It's good to ask that question so that you can then tell the officer, I asked that person and this is what they said. But what it will come down to in some situations is a he said, she said, or she said, he said, he said situation. And I can't in my report say that Rashini told me that this officer, that this other person ran the red light and that's what happened. Because I can only take your statement and the other person's statement and put it together in a report. So that's important for you to be able to say. But I think what's most important at the scene is for you to get that person's information, see their driver's license, make sure that they are who they say they are, take pictures of the vehicle so that you remember the plate number, the make and model, get phone numbers, any information that you need to provide to your insurance, get that. You know, a lot of times people won't give you all of their information, and occasionally they leave the scene of a crash. So we want you to get as much information as possible. If you're concerned about someone leaving the scene or you're concerned about them not being honest about who they are, and that gives us a lot of information to move forward with. You know,
if you have any questions for Sergeant Isaiah Williams, give us a call, 651-989-9226, or text us 81807. Or if you want to share your own story and maybe what helped you get through it or some tips for just being safer out there, would love to hear from you. Distracted driving, Sergeant Williams, is a big topic right now, whether it's people on the phone, texting while they're driving. I mean, a number of things, eating, putting on lipstick, whatever it may be. Are we seeing any, I mean, there have been campaigns about this to get people to not text while driving. Are we seeing any improvement here?
You know, it's hard to say. We are absolutely. I think as awareness is in the forefront of people's minds, I think they're starting to make that decision to wait, to put the phone down and get where they need to be. But there will always be some who say, you know what, I'm really good at multitasking. I do it at work all day. I can do it in the car. And if you're not good at multitasking behind the wheel of a car when you're going 30 to 60 plus miles an hour. I see it when I'm in my personal car. I don't see it as much when I'm in a squad car because people look for you. But when I'm in my personal car, I see them on their cell phone, and it's very concerning because the message is out there. I think everyone has been touched by someone who has driven distracted and injured someone else or inconvenienced someone with a car crash. I think we all know someone, but to make that conscious decision to say, I will put the phone down and I will be a part of the solution, it's hard to gauge that because every day we have crashes involving distracted drivers. And it's hard to say that that one crash that we prevented makes up for that one that we didn't, you know, or that one person that drove and injured someone. I'd love to say that we're way ahead of the game here in Minnesota, but it still happens. And I'm sure you see it on your day-to-day as well.
Yes, absolutely. And that was one of those days where I'm glad I was not at fault in any way, and the police officer's report showed that.
Good.
And the two of us drivers who were hit, we both had green lights. And the driver who went through the red light, it was very clear that he had done that. But the bottom line is, it's also good to review the report. For example, I read every page of that six-page report to make sure all the details were in there. And in that, I found out the driver who hit us was 19 years old. He had some violations, traffic violations already. Mm-hmm. And I found out the other driver who was hit was 25 years old. So, you know, it was almost these little details that you pick up by just protecting yourself, reading the reports, making sure all the information in there is accurate. And there was one point that was maybe a typo, and I, you know, that emailed the officer and I said, you know, and I pointed it out respectfully, and he said, you know what, I'll send you an updated one, because that was important, because that updated and accurate report then has to go to my insurance company. Okay. So these are the little things that in the heat of the moment you don't always remember, but it is so important.
Yep. And I would say, especially in an intersection crash, it's always good to see if there's any witnesses, because you got very lucky where the person who was at fault said, I did this and I was wrong, and, you know, I'm accountable to my actions. But very often we have intersection crashes where they say, well, my light was green too. And then you have to rely on, was there any witnesses that saw this person run the red light, and who can help me corroborate my story so that the insurance knows that I was in the right? It's very, very important. A lot of times witnesses assume that the other person's going to say the right thing, and they keep going. So if you can, try to wave someone down and say, did you see that? Can you be a witness for me?
There were, you know, some people who came out from the office buildings nearby, and they were checking on us. There were these two women in an SUV who happened to drive by. I kind of saw them earlier, but then about an hour or hour and a half later, they drove by again, and they pulled up next to me and said, do you need a ride somewhere? We've noticed you've been here a while. You were here the last time we drove around. I said, oh, no, my husband's coming to get me. Don't worry. I'm just waiting for my car to be towed. But I thought that was really sweet.
Very sweet.
You know,
yes.
And only in Minnesota, right, does that happen. This listener is texting this. My daughter was involved in a minor accident. She shared her driver's license and insurance with the other driver. However, the other driver only had her driver's license. When police were contacted the next day, we were told they won't take a report. Why?
Okay, so
they didn't call the police on the scene, it sounds like.
Okay. So if a driver exchanges information with another driver, then most times a citizen will say, we don't need you to respond. We'll exchange information and go on about our day without the law enforcement report. One thing that can be good about that is that you're saving a little time waiting for a law enforcement officer to come. The bad side is that if that other person doesn't have insurance or decides at any point that they want to pretend like they weren't there, there's no report saying that they were or that this happened. So you're kind of going based off the trust factor there. And sometimes you get
burned.
The short end, yes. Sometimes you get burned.
I'd love your take on this, and I feel for you. This listener is texting in. 4 years ago on 94, right before the Hennepin exit, I was rear-ended. It was a lot of traffic. You know, it gets really crazy there over in that right lane as everyone is either trying to get onto 11th or Hennepin in Lindale.
Yes.
And so I've thousands of times probably been right in that spot. So I was careful driving slowly. All of a sudden, I'm hit not once but twice. So what I think happened was a car, two cars behind me, hit the car in front of it, and then, you know, they both kind of ended up coming into me. So we all moved over to the side of the road. Everyone was respectful and wanted to be quick and said, you know, I had very minor damage, but still some damage. And, you know, when you're rear-ended, there could be whiplash, things like this. So everybody was saying, let's just, you know, keep this quick. Let's exchange information. I learned my lesson, folks. Always call the police. Both of those drivers had insurance cards and licenses. The one who was really the causer of it, because he was the second car, his insurance company, you know, heard from my insurance company, we did get some money. But that middle driver, she had a license and an insurance card. They were not valid. The insurance company was not, she didn't have insurance anymore. So the bottom line was, and, you know, she even gave me her name and her number. I didn't try to stalk her, don't worry. But who knows even if that number was correct. Don't trust people on the scene. I mean, I learned the hard way. You want to be quick. Always, always, always call the police, because then there's that record that's objective, that's out there, that isn't he said, she said, or he said, he said. Whatever.
Exactly. And if you call law enforcement and you get that report and you do decide to handle it outside of your insurance with the other parties, then do that if that's your choice, if you're choosing to do that. And then if things don't work out with that, and if one of the people isn't cooperating, then you always have that report to fall back on, and then you can make that report with your insurance company.
Yeah.
So it's always there if you need it.
And there's something about the police calling when you've been untruthful, because there is that police report, that sometimes just makes people a little more truthful, right?
Absolutely, absolutely, 100%. And we can always call and verify that that insurance is valid. You always want to make sure that you see that driver's license and make sure they are who they say they are, because it happens all the time. Your situation, all the time when I worked on patrol, this person isn't who they said they were. They presented a false insurance card.
Yeah. Well, you know, great tips. Thank you, Sergeant, for joining us. She is joining us from the Minnesota State Patrol. And, of course, Sergeant Williams, I know you want people to stay safe out there, but you got to be smart.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. All the time.
All right. Well, thanks so much. We're going to take a break. And then an event that hasn't happened for 150 years. What is it? We'll get into it when we return.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Rashini Rajkumar back with you. Love to hear from you. What did you think about the Oscar nominations? They came out just a few days ago. 81807, text me if you think they're right on or who your favorites are. Did you know that it's a once in a very long time occurrence, and it hasn't happened since 1866, and it will be happening on the 31st of January. And it is a blue moon, a supermoon, and a lunar eclipse. They will all fall on the same night. Wow. That has not happened for more than 150 years. These three lunar events are separately not too uncommon, but it is rare, according to AccuWeather.com, for all three to occur at the same time. The last time, Jonathan, that there was a blue moon, a supermoon, and a total lunar eclipse at the same time for North America was on March 31st, 1866.
So what night is this again? I was running around.
Oh, January 31st. It's coming up.
So that would be Thursday.
No, Wednesday night.
Wednesday.
But, you know, just kind of into the late hours.
Okay. I just need to know what night to.
Oh, it's Tuesday night into Wednesday, because it says 2:51 a.m. Pacific time, which is 4:51 Central time on January 31st. That's when the eclipse will start. Now, again, it's three different events. So I'm trying to sort of clock. You know, I think you have to kind of hang out for about 45 minutes to catch it all.
All I need to know is just the time frame of the night.
Mm-hmm.
So I can
get up early,
lock my door, and fortify it with steel around the sides and make sure that there are some sort of concrete pillars that are blocking it.
Are you worried about werewolves?
I'm worried. Okay. No, I'm not worried about werewolves. I know that those are fictional creatures. I know that those don't exist. But the crazies do come out on a full moon.
Who think they're werewolves.
Well, some do, yes. But technically, the crazies come out on, and again, I know I'm not being politically correct right now. I don't care. They come out on full moons. Not just the fact that it's a blue moon, plus a lunar eclipse.
Right.
And a supermoon.
Right.
The amount of crazy that I don't want on my doorstep is evident. And I just want to protect the other people from the potential of how crazy I could get as well.
Oh, well, that's good to know. Good heads up there.
I just want everybody to be safe reciprocally.
Yes.
Reciprocally.
All around. Let's just say all around. Just another little fun fact. During a total lunar eclipse, the moon passes through the darkest part of the Earth's shadow. But unlike a total solar eclipse, which lasts only minutes, this total lunar eclipse will last for several hours. And again, about 4:51 a.m., the wee hours or the early hours on January 31st, which is Wednesday. But the shadow of the Earth will really begin to become noticeable on the face of the moon at 5:58 a.m. So, I mean, we're talking, it stretches over time. It sounds cool. I'm big on things happening in the sky and the stars. And, you know, we get a lot of different people emailing and texting about things to cover on the show. So I have to thank my mother, my own mother, Concy, for telling me about this very cool event. The Oscar nominations 2018 were just announced. Any surprises for you? Let me know. 81807 is our text if you want to share what your thoughts are about that. One of the things that I was excited to see was that in the lead actress category, we've got Margot Robbie and Meryl Streep, but I'm really excited for Margot Robbie, who stars in I, Tonya. And I just can't tell you enough about this movie. It gives us an interpretation after interviewing Tonya Harding herself, other key players, the guys that were found to be liable, guilty of some of the actions. And what we see, or what I saw for one of the first times, is that Tonya Harding did not instruct anyone to take a wrench or, you know, to Nancy Kerrigan's knee. And in fact, even her fiance, former husband, whatever, even he didn't. He kind of put into motion some things that got way out of hand and ended with this kind of random hitman being hired by the friend of Tonya's husband to do this. So it's a really, really interesting, you know, because this event happened in our lifetime, it's an interesting movie, very well done, great filmmaking, which I will say. I, Tonya, have you seen it yet, Jonathan?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
It's good. I really hope Margot Robbie, who plays Tonya Harding, gets the Oscar for that. I mean, she doesn't look to be the favorite, but I hope she does.
She had a chance to get the SAG. I didn't vote for Margot Robbie.
Who'd you vote for?
I voted for Sally Hawkins from The Shape of Water.
The Shape of Water.
Thought she was really good in
and
that.
And that is being not many. It led the field for Oscar nominations. Yeah. All right, we're going to take a break. And then when we come back, we'll talk Road to the Super Bowl with Wayne Kostrowski.